Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Staying Aligned podcast. My name is Alexander Eisner. I'm joined, as always, by the ever-present and often plucky Sean Steele. We are here today and excited to have our favorite guest, our most common guest, our most requested guest, the billing and coding guru himself, Sam Collins. Sam, thank you, as always, for being here with us.
It's my pleasure. I enjoy always being with you. And in fact, I'm going to flip the script a little bit today because there's some questions I want to ask you. Because as when I do the network, which is offices join, they can ask me questions. I've had a lot of PI questions lately on about negotiating liens, and I think it's important. I've given advice, but I'd love to hear your take. But I want to get into some of the topics we came in for. But there's a couple I want to reverse, because what my hope is that we can always provide some new tools and insights, but also some ways to really properly understand the intimacies of personal injury, because frankly, it is the last place doctors get paid in full. And when I see offices not emphasizing this, I think you've got to be crazy. Why are you fighting for these managed care pennies when a personal injury is going to pay you so much more? And it doesn't mean it's everything, but come on, it's got to be a good part of your practice.
I love hearing you say those words. We go up and down California preaching exactly that, and to hear from you is beautiful music. But yeah, we'd love it if you flip the script on us. Go for it.
Okay, well, here's one that just came up. So I had an office that the case settled for what they called was policy limit. So when they said that, I thought, oh, is that going to be good? But I've learned from both of you, policy limit, be careful, because the policy limit on this thing was $15,000. So right there, I said, well, did you look at the claim? Was there enough money to go around? Well, as it be said, they, there should be about 5,000, assuming, a third, whatever. We know there's a little extra cost. The problem is they really, his bills represented about 60% of the total medical bills. So, in deference to that, you would think, okay, the money set aside for doctor's bills should be roughly paid out, and then you would get a prorated share if your bill represented 60%, you get 60% of that. Well, they're wanting to make it much, much lower. And I said, well, there could be other issues going on, but here's the problem. This attorney's office does not want to disclose anything other than to say, we've got to cut your bill. And I want to know, well, what are the other providers reducing to? Why am I reducing more? And how do they deal with that when they won't disclose what is being paid out? What can you do?
Yeah. So we always say, look, if you want to tell the doctors about the reductions, then as a doctor, you might be interested in having a conversation, seeing what's going on with the finances of the case. Did something bad happen? Did it fall off the track somewhere? No fault of anybody. I mean, what happened here? And is everybody taking a sizable cut? I don't believe in pro rata at all. I think that all that does is serves to incentivize overinflated billing. Pro rata often gives the biggest amount of money to MRI facilities. Why? Because they're the worst offenders of inflated billing. So I don't see pro rata as making a ton of sense. As in my world, if I have to cut bills, I would much rather cut an MRI facility 80% and pay a chiropractor 100%. Well, that's not pro rata, but it's definitely fair. So so I have that. But if I have a law firm that's going to say, you have no right to ask me about the breakdown, my response as a doctor would be, well, you're absolutely right. Then you pay me 100% and then I have no right to know. I have no right to know who you're paying or how much you're paying or how much you're cutting. That is none of my damn business if you're paying my bill 100%. But the second you want to cut my bill, a dollar, now I think I have a right to know. And if you don't think I have a right to know, then I'm not interested in any further negotiations of my bill. So we're at a bit of a stalemate here, counsel. If you want to have a conversation about a reduction in my bill, then you're going to need to explain to me in words I can understand why I should have to do that. And that's going to include explaining who else is taking a cut and how big of a cut are they taking. And a lot of times you'll hear things about, oh, it's attorney-client, it's HIPAA, it's fiduciary duty. It's none of that. It's none of that. It's garbage. They can tell you if they want to. And oftentimes the reason they don't want to is because it's horrible, because it's bad news, because it would show something like the attorney allowed the client to rack up $20,000 or $30,000 of bills in the first few months, knowing full well it was only a $15,000 policy. And now they're forcing this cut down everybody's throat while the attorney is going to try to take their full fee. How is that fair? Right.
Okay.
So that's why they try not to they try to hide the ball. Sean, what else you got?
Those are powerful arguments, and a kind of a different direction than I would have guessed. But there's another consideration. The attorneys could be deceiving in another method. They settle the third party for 15. The bills are 20, 30, 50, $100,000. I'm sorry, we settled the case for 15,000. Technically true. They might have overlooked the $1 million uninsured motorist claim. That would be very deceptive. So they buy out the bills early on for, 10 cents on the dollar, and the doctor, yeah, we're doing a pro rata. Everybody's taking a cut. It's terrible. We're really sad. And they're screwing the doctor. So what you need is further documentation. What I like to do is get a deal, any deal that they suggest on the telephone, I don't like, period. I want them to put it in writing. Lawyers hate to lie in writing. They get really burned that way. So make them lie in writing. And then the push question is, and again, if you forget all those doctors, we don't care. Just contact us or Sam. If you forget, basically, you say, oh, and by the way, how much is the uninsured motorist insurance? You might actually know that. It might be in your files, but and the clients might know that, but don't depend on it. Just ask the attorney straight up, how much is the UIM? And we find typically a large percentage of our cases go to uninsured motorists or underinsured motorist coverage. We settle the 15 right away, and then we move to the UIM. That much takes longer because there's more money at stake. By the way, it's frustrating for the doctors. Why is that? They got to wait longer, but they're going to get with us, they're going to get paid 100%. But the other guys, if they're not scrupulous, they're going to get cheated substantially, and they won't even know it. Because technically, the case was settled. One of the two cases was settled for policy limits. By the way, Alex is feeling really good. He just had a kick-ass, stomp-ass session with the judge this morning that just smothered the defense on a case they were trying to kick out of court. So if his
Oh,
head is
that's
too
good.
big for the screen, that's why.
Well, I think it's important, Alex, what you said about the pro rata. And that's something I should have pro rata if everything is, but MRI bills and certain things are just inflated. What if they went to a neurologist that charges $1,000 for an exam? So those all have to be considered. So now what do I do when they say, okay, we're not going to do it? If I want to, let's say it's less than 10,000, can I take them to small claims court? And if I do, do I name the attorney? Do I name the patient? How do I go about that?
Yes. Yes, you can take them to small claims court. You absolutely should take them to small claims court. And so long as you have a lien signed by the attorney, I'm going to say that one more time for emphasis. So long as you have a lien signed by the attorney, you can name the attorney or the law firm or both. It doesn't matter. I tend not to recommend naming the client or the patient. You end up with bad blood that way, and it's just cleaner to name the attorney. That's my personal style. You can name the individual patient. They have obligations to pay you, just like the attorney does if they sign the lien as well. But the attorney owes you, in legal terms, it's called a fiduciary duty when they sign your lien. If they resolve the case and they don't make good on your lien, they are in violation of their fiduciary duty. But in layman's terms, it's just a breach of contract. The lien is a contract, and it says if you, the chiropractor, do the work that you say you're going to do, that you will get paid in the end. And so when you sue the attorney for breach of contract, you attach a copy of that lien. That's the contract signed by the attorney. You have to prove that you performed under the contract. Well, that's just your medical records, your soap notes showing that you did the work on the dates you said you did the work. And then you have to show your damages. Well, that's just your medical bill. So you just attach the bill that shows how much money that you are owed. Now you've got a perfected breach of contract claim. You've got the contract signed by the attorney. You've got the bills, I mean, the records that show that you performed under the contract, and you've got your bill showing your damages. You file that in small claims court. You get the attorney served by the local sheriff or the attorney service or somebody. I mean, in the dozen or so I've assisted in over the last year or so, 100% success rate. I mean, 100%, including one where the attorney lost, they appealed, trial de novo, lost again. The judges just hate this. It looks so bad. There's no defense. The attorneys get in there and they start rah-rah. Oh, the bill's unreasonable. It's inflated. It's this, it's that. And the judge just goes, counsel, I'm looking at this lien. Doesn't say anything about any of that. It doesn't say you don't have to pay so long as the bill's not inflated. It doesn't say you only have to pay for treatment that's reasonable and necessary. It doesn't say any of that. Of course it doesn't, because you're the chiropractor. You wrote the lien, or you took ours and we wrote the lien. So, counsel, where in here does it say you get to stiff the chiropractor? And it doesn't say that. Of course it doesn't. And they throw the book at them. And once they do, now you've got a judgment against a law firm, which of course you can send to the state bar so that they can start keeping tabs on breaches of fiduciary duty. They take that very seriously.
That's
And
the
you're
one
going to
thing
get,
they do.
yeah, it's one thing they do. And you're going to get paid. So yes, you can take them to small claims court. And one thing I've found with the chiropractors that have done this is it just takes one. And it changes their whole mindset because of how easy it is. I mean, really, you're just attaching a couple of documents you already have and paying the $50 filing fee. It used to be you had to go spend your whole day down at the courthouse. Now it's all on Zoom. So you just do it over a lunch hour and you sit there. You don't have to say much. The judge does it all for you. And then 30 days later, you get a judgment in the mail. I mean, it's so darn easy that you win one of these. And after that, you don't deal with attorneys the same way ever again. You just don't. They start giving you the runaround. You send them a 72-hour, hey, pay or I'll sue you. If they don't, you file. But chances are, once you know how easy that is, it changes your whole outlook on how you're going to handle, the shady PI attorney.
Great,
Well, tell me
great
this. This is
question.
the way I've always thought of it. I've learned that how do you know an attorney is lying? And I say this in the most gracious way. Their lips are moving. But what I
Adam,
mean by that, and
you
I
don't
think
joke.
Sean hit that well, if it's in an attorney doesn't lie in writing because now there's proof. I can always tell you later that's not what I said. Because if an attorney won't give me that breakdown, I think what they're hiding. Now, what if we go to small claims and it turns out the settlement was garbage? There's a bunch of bills. Obviously, then we're going to get reduced, but I don't think it's any worse. But my concern is when they're not giving me the information. Now, do you recommend at all if they have a relationship with a patient? Shouldn't the patient have all that data? Like who's been paid what? And might we get some of that from the patient? That would be helpful to know.
Totally. You can ask the patient. The patient can give you any information they want. I mean, they're under even less obligation, right? There's no attorney client. There's no, right? They can divulge any information they want. HIPAA, I mean, all of that is there. They can waive at their prerogative, if even if it were applicable, and it's not in this instance. So yes, and not only that, but before you get to the part where you're suing attorneys, patient education, teaching your patients the whole way through about how the liens work and how you get paid and how you're concerned that, hey, if these things go south and your attorney doesn't pay me or chooses not to, well, then I wouldn't get paid. I mean, patients trust their chiropractors infinitely more than they'll ever trust their attorneys. It's just the way the world works. If you put your hands on somebody and you make them feel better, that's trust that I can never build with them.
Right.
And so I found that the chiropractors that spend some time teaching, educating their patients along the way how this is all going to work, showing them a bill once a month. Hey, this isn't due now. I just want you to see how much, you owe at the end of all of this, so they're not shocked at the end. For example, if you have a client that emails me at the end of the case or calls me and says, I want you to pay my chiropractor in full, I'm obligated to do it. I have to do it. So, I mean, you can affect these things from the very beginning. By just laying the foundation, the groundwork with your patient to be an advocate for the chiropractor. Yes, obviously, if it gets to something bad happening, you can have the client, start to solicit the client to give you information, the patient giving you information. But well before that, if they're on your side, if they think you should that you've earned your keep, that you've earned your money, that you should be paid in full, they can become an advocate for you, and you don't have to do a thing. They just go to the attorney and go, hey, I want you to pay my chiropractor. And I mean, it's really nothing to the attorney to do it. I mean, it
Okay.
doesn't take out of my fee.
I got to jump
But now,
in.
if they pay it in full,
Hey,
now.
Sam, give me a shot here. You're on a roll, but I got two things that's right relevant. It's funny because I had a last night coming up at San Joaquin. Great outfit, hungry, smart-minded chiropractors up there. One, what are the limits if you're incorporated, Alex? If you're a chiropractic corporation, how much can you sue for?
I think it's still 10,000. Is it a different?
I'm not so sure. I'd get John in here. Somebody
You think
call
it's a
John.
different number?
He's the expert. Hey, John. Sorry, guys. I'll turn off the
Anyway, what were you saying?
number two.
Yeah,
Number two,
well,
San Joaquin. Here's a real case. Nice guy chiropractor's been doing this for 20 years. Case gets settled, and he finds out it was settled last October, and he's owed $5,400. And so he likes the patient, has a relationship with the patient. But he talked to the patient, and number one, the attorney's not getting back. So, it's the same old, screw him, ignore him, nothing's going to happen. Number two, so he's talking to the patient. Patient's kind of flustered, thought the doctor got paid. And I said, well, does he have a client settlement statement? What does he have? So this is the case where you might actually have to sue the patient and the attorney. Now, again, we frown on that. We don't want to do it. But we're trying to engage the patient. So the strategy is this, and see if you guys agree with this. One, absolutely. Oh, wow. One chiropractor says he's trying to get in and can't get in. Please send me white paper and notes. Thank you, Dr. King. All right, more on that later. So what does the contact work with the patient? Write a letter that the patient signs, sends it to the attorney. Hey, you didn't pay my attorney. I'm on the hook. I feel bad about it. I signed a lien. Oh, here's the trick. The attorney never signed a lien. Never signed a lien. And the doctor kept working and churning and working and churning. However, go through the patient saying, look, I'm on the hook. I thought everything was settled. I thought you were going to pay me. Please take care of the attorney of the doctor. I doubt that'll happen, but at least it sets it up. Give them, 3, 5 days. And if that doesn't work, then the patient goes to the state bar. Saying, hey, I've been left in the, I've been isolated. I wasn't represented properly. I have fiduciary, as Alex referred to earlier. I'm stuck here. I owe $5,400. The case settled for a very good amount of money, and the attorney refused to cooperate. I don't know if that's going to help. And then finally, sue the client for the $5,400 and get a judgment. And again, that's a second complaint to the state bar. What do you think, Alex?
I like complaining to the state bar when it's warranted. To answer the question you asked earlier, small claims limit for a corporation in California, $6,250. I think it
And
was just recently raised by 2250. The same with the individual limit has gone up from 10,000 to 12,500. So,
thank you. That was fast work, man. He's that grokker
now, is
is
that
just amazing.
12,500 aggregate, or is that per
Per
lawsuit?
claim,
Per
it's per
claim.
claim.
Okay.
Yeah, what
Because
you're
here's the
doing.
issue I run into. It's not so much the claim settled well. It's where these claims don't settle well, and it just seems they're being treated, unfairly or without knowledge. Now, you mentioned about making a complaint to the state bar. Now, I will give my experience. Often, when it's just a chiropractor negotiating or anyone negotiating with an attorney over funds, I don't think the state bar does a whole lot
I
because they don't
agree.
get into
Agree.
negotiations.
Yeah.
But if we can get the client to say it's not fair, then that might be different. But now you need that patient who you've befriended, as Alex pointed out, but this, puts a lot of things in place for us to have to be able to do. Because if it's just us arguing, a lot of people, well, I'm going to file that Andrelini letter. Well, that's great, but let's be realistic. Has that happened since then?
Even Alex doesn't know what the Andrelini letter
Well,
is.
there you go.
In ancient history, there was a state bar president that the CCA contacted. We're talking in the last millennium, so it's a long time ago
It was in the early 80s, I believe.
when Alex was about 2 years old or maybe six, as old as this boy is now. Andrelini wrote a letter that attorneys that don't pay chiropractic liens are awful people and should be reported to the state bar. So I used that letter, milked it for years and years and years, and the state bar walked away from that letter a lot of times, but I still had the letter and I still sent it to everybody and still looked good. The bottom line is this: you get the client motivated and they don't want to pay out of their pocket. That's the most powerful tool against attorneys. Period. Not a vendor, not a doctor, not a nice guy down the street, not an expert witness, but the client, because that's what the bar is pretending to do, bend over backwards to help the long-suffering client from an avaricious attorney. So chances are, if the attorney lives in a glass house, he'll pay sooner rather than later. If the attorney's uptight, doesn't care about the wrath of the bar, it may not go anywhere. And ultimately, the biggest lesson of all is what Sam says from minute one: get the damn lien signed. You don't have a deal. The attorney has no legal obligation to pay the chiropractor. Morally, he does. Ethically, he does. Should he be protecting his client? Should he advise the client? Probably should have advised the client. There's might maybe a cause of action against the attorney by the client. Hey, look, I don't know, PI. I thought everything was going to be taken care of. But the and the doctor also promised me he was going to definitely change his protocols and making sure the liens are properly signed. Good question, Sam.
Yeah, well, because for me, my concern is that, and I don't want to name any firms, but let's just say Morgan Freeman, a law firm,
Yeah,
and
I
you get
know.
one from something like that, and they just
That
automatically, and they just send it to you, and they're really strong arming. How effective? I mean, how much can we push? And I think this comes back to trying to get your clients to the right type of attorney. And
Yeah.
one, I won't say pro chiropractic, but just pro business, pro clients, meaning
Yeah.
the doctor as well.
Well,
And that's the difficulty. I want that
pro
honesty. I'm like, hey.
chiropractic is an advantage. It's a billboard attorney. Alex and I, Sam, you know what? We should bring Sam in one of those. We're going to be doing a 6-part series podcast with a short version and an extended version about the problems with trial attorneys. And there's so many problems. We want to make this a very useful subject matter oriented on certain areas that really bother not just doctors, but clients as well. And so we want this, it'll get published widely. And so we're making plans on that now. But that's just one of the examples. The billboard attorneys, basically, when you call a billboard, when a client calls a billboard attorney, he never talks to the law firm and or the lawyer. That's physically impossible for them to do. They call a call center, probably in Des Moines, Iowa. And people are getting paid, just to, they have a protocol to follow, and they're trying to isolate the 3 or 4 good cases out of 100. And then the marginal cases that have some med pay, that have some value, that might be 20 out of 100. The rest they discard and throw them away and tell them not to call again. Because it just, it's like fishing. It's like the Chinese, there's several hundred Chinese fishing boats outside of Argentina getting all the squid of the ocean. Whoever heard of that, they're saying of it, it's on the internet now. Hundreds of these ships, and they're trawlers, and they just simply scoop up all the squid. Now, frankly, that doesn't bother me, but my wife loves squid. But and a lot of people in China love squid, and so there's not going to be a whole lot of squid around. So when they soak up and get everything, and violating nations' natural barriers and territories, it's interesting. Well, that's kind of the same concept, Alex. You see, I got back to this thread
Well,
here.
here's
With the
I
billboard
want to bring
attorney,
this
you're
back
scooping up all the stuff.
to
Yeah, Ryan
circle,
said
because here's what I want to make
something.
sure, can we resolve this? And here's kind of my take, and you can tell me, Alex, whether this makes sense. This is how I advise. When you first get a claim, you have to review the validity of the claim, all the property damage, liability, is there insurance, is there underinsured? In fact, I know personally, when I went through an accident, thank God I had you guys to help me. You dealt with because I had an uninsured motorist. And of course, you were able to get, do a good settlement for me, though that was a messy claim. My point is though, you better make sure to look at these because if you know that that claim is already shaky, might you be smarter to think maybe I'm taking a risk and going to take a haircut and not try to have this fantasy that everything's going to pay great, kind of know a little bit more about that from the get-go? And
Yeah.
I'm not saying the attorney shouldn't be more forthcoming with it. But I think it's going to comes back to us as making sure are we taking a good claim?
Yeah. It's a shame, Sam. If you're working with a good attorney, and not to toot our own horn, but I think we qualify, but we're not the only ones in the world. There are other good attorneys. If you're working with a
Name them. Name them right now, Alex. Alphabetically in reverse. Okay, just go.
if you're working with a good attorney, you trust, they're not going to screw you. That's their job, and we are uniquely qualified to answer the question, how strong a case is this? What are the odds I'm going to get paid? Because I work on contingency too. So I'm looking out for the business of the case, the business of the firm, but also the business of all the medical providers who are relying on me, whose lien I'm signing on. To say, yeah, I'm putting my stamp of approval on this case, and I'm going to make sure you get paid in the end of this.
Alex, you got a question here.
Hang on. I'm in the middle of my answer, and then I'll answer this question.
I thought you were finished with your answer. It
I
sounded
was.
complete
That
to
was
me.
just if you. It's step one. But to Sam's point, if you're working with a law firm or an attorney that you either don't know of the veracity, the strength of their case review process, or worse, you do know and you know it is the type of law firm that's got a pretty substantial drop rate, right? They take, they just funnel everything in, let them treat for a few months, and then some case manager takes a look at it and goes, oh, police reports against us. Let's just drop the case, right? And now they leave all the medical providers holding the bag. then yeah, unfortunately, it's going to be fall to the chiropractor to do a little bit of what otherwise should be my job and review the claim and see if it's actually a decent claim. So what does that mean? It means asking the client to take a look at the pictures, right? Everybody's walking around with a phone in their pocket now. Ask them, let me see the pictures of the damage, right? And do if you have to do too many of these, the pinch and grab to zoom in, zoom in, zoom in to find the damage in the car, that's not a good sign, right? You should be able to see where one car hit another car. Ask to see the police report or the traffic collision report if you can. It's great to, and they'll often tell you right there on page one or page three who they think is at fault for the accident. It's always kind of a running joke, but statistically speaking, every car accident that has two parties in it, one party's at fault and the other party's not. So 50-50, right? But if you go out into the world and you've talked to people who've been in car accidents, somehow well over 80, 90% of the people you happen to be talking to were not at fault for the accident they were in. Well, that's statistically impossible, right? So you're going to need to do a little of this analysis yourself, figure out who was actually legally at fault for this accident. Find out if they had car insurance, right? Are they Prop 213, which is a whole other podcast, but did they have a valid auto insurance policy at the time of the accident, even if they weren't at fault? Find out if the statute, was there a huge gap in treatment, between the time of the accident and the first time they see any medical provider at all for the accident? Shouldn't be more than a week or two. If you find out that, oh, they got into this accident 3 months ago and they never saw anybody, but now their back's really hurting them, that's not probably a very good case. So yeah, there are a bunch of things that chiropractors can pretty easily look at and say, is there going to be a case here? Or am I going to be treating and sort of scaring, threatening my bottom line? Is there a big risk that I'm not going to get paid? So yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a scary reality that they're going to need to start doing a lot of their own case screening.
Okay, 2 minutes. Let's wrap it
All right.
up. But let's answer that question.
But here's so I want to make sure people hear, because it's something, yes, you can take them to court, but we got to make sure now if there is not a lot of money, if there is a lot of medical bills, it may not be as good as you think, because they're certainly not going to say you deserve more than anyone else, though there could be some arguments for inflated bills. But I think we have to be reasonable also that are you going to get less? Like I have a lot of people, well, why doesn't the attorney reduce their bill? Well, I think they already have, because they get a third. So what I think doctors forget is if the attorney is reducing their bill, do you think the attorney is going to say, I'm going to reduce my pay so the doctor can get more? Now, I'm not saying that never happens, but I'm talking about the groups, unlike what you guys do, is to try to make it equitable. They're going to say no, because the only place that money is going to come from, either another provider has to reduce their fee or the patient. So you've got to, again, put that realistic mode. And if you're dealing with one of those billboard guys, I just don't see that happening. So it could be also that you want to be careful of taking those types of claims, unless it's a very, very good one. Because if it's one that's minimal, you're probably going to get burned.
And having, I mean, and this is where this is the shameless plug, but if you don't know, run it by somebody you trust. I mean, that's what we're here for. I mean, you run one of those cases by us and you say, hey, what do you think? Do you think I'm going to get screwed here? When we turn down a case, the information we give you when we turn down the case is just as valuable, if not more so, than the information when we take one. Because we'll call you up and go, hey, we're not taking this case because X, Y, and Z. Too big a gap in treatment, your client's at fault for the accident, there's no insurance. I mean, whatever information there is. Because what's going to happen when we turn them down? 10 seconds later, you're going to get a phone call from your patient going, hey, good news, Sean and Alex turned me down, but insert billboard attorney here didn't. And they're willing to sign your lien. And so now you're going to have the choice of, am I going to treat this patient on a lien basis with this attorney, knowing what Alex and Sean told me? Or not. And that and you know, so that's so it's that. Sam, I want you to put up your slide while I answer this question real quick. Somebody asked the question, if the attorney gave a chicken scratch signature on the lien, is that okay, or do they need to stamp it with the attorney's name? A chicken scratch signature is fine. Any mark that they make on the lien and send it back to you is perfectly fine, so long as they're not going to try to claim that it's not really their signature. But chances are, if they sign it and the law firm sends it back to you signed, it would be very difficult for them to argue that it's not really their signature that they sent back to you. So a chicken scratch signature, it doesn't matter what the signature looks like, so long as they sign it and they don't edit it. They don't try to change the wording of the lien itself. Sam, take us out. What do you got on the screen for
Yeah,
us?
what I have here, I just want to make sure I want to give somebody some things. This is our 2025 diagnosis codes that I want everyone to have, because what's going to be the lifeblood of any PI claim is having the correct diagnosis for the condition of the patient, the type of sequelae they may have, to make sure you give the attorney the right amount of information so that when the patient has greater damages, your documentation, your diagnosis does that. So please make sure you get a copy of this. No obligation to you, just get it. We'll send it to you via email. It's a very nice little booklet, and I would say it's going to be good through October. Make sure to see us later this year because, of course, diagnosis codes do update in October. And as always, I really appreciate the time being with you and a chance to go through some of these things, because I think it's important for people to know that sometimes you got to look at these claims and you got to be willing to understand to fight.
Absolutely. Sam, as always, amazing information. I wanted a couple of quick plugs. We're taking the show on the road, live in Thousand Oaks on March 8th. If you're interested in coming out and doing a couple of hours with us in Thousand Oaks, you can register on our website, steeleisner.com/events, on March 8th in Thousand Oaks. And then we're also in Long Beach on March 12th. Amazing barbecue. Couple of hours of continuing education on March 12th in Long Beach. Sean, anything for the good of the order?
I think we're in good shape. Sam, we're going to do more of these with you. We're just having too much fun. You flipped the script on us completely. We violated the 30-minute rule, but I don't mind at all. It was good information. We actually learned it. 12.5 per chiropractor and 6.250 for corporations that happen to be chiropractic. Kind of an odd way of punishing a chiropractic corporation, but still, 62 is going to get most of your bills paid from skunk-minded attorneys. Take care, everybody.
Thank
Well,
you,
thanks,
everybody.
guys.
Thank you, Sam.
See you next time.